Captain. Conversation. On Cape Talk.
Now, as we head into the second hour of the show, we're changing things around a little bit for a Thursday. We're doing an early edition of Book Club today because an international author whose book I really loved is available today, and I didn't want to miss the chance to chat to her. So that is up next. After 2:30, our trivia quiz, Who Am I?, where you've got a chance to win a local non-fiction book. We hope to squeeze in a conversation about recycling ahead of National Recycling Day tomorrow, and we'll certainly finish with the music of Martin Hulbert. But first, our book club. Now, this is a book I actually read during the July holidays, and it had me gripped from the very first page to the very last. It is the story of a global pandemic, of the people it claims, of the struggle of those left behind, of the way it turned the world's economy on its head, of the rivalry and sometimes cooperation among the scientists as they raced to find a vaccine and a cure. Sounds familiar, right? But here's the thing. This is a work of speculative fiction which was written in 2018, before any of us had ever heard of COVID-19. The book is called The End of Men, and it is my immense pleasure to welcome its author, Christina Sweeney Baird, to the show today. Christina grew up in Glasgow and London and studied law at Cambridge University, graduating in 2015. And she now works as a corporate litigation lawyer in London. The End of Men is her debut novel, and what a way to start. Christina's with us on Zoom. Thank you so much for making time to chat to us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's a great, great pleasure. Now, look, without giving away too much of the plot, maybe let's take a moment just to frame this conversation for our listeners by setting out the premise of the book. Christina, it's 2025. We open in a hospital in Glasgow where what has happened?
So the book is set across 6 years, and it fundamentally asks the question, what would the world look like without men? There is a virus to which women are immune, which very quickly kills 90% of the male population. So you follow a range of characters as they try to keep their friends, their families, their husbands, fathers, sons safe. And you follow people like Amanda, who is a doctor who treats patients zero and recognizes the pandemic quite quickly. Catherine, who is an anthropologist in London, who's trying to keep her husband and son safe. Dawn, who is a civil servant who keeps getting promoted, partly by virtue of the fact that she remains alive. And so through these different characters, you get to see the short term and then the longer term of how the world changes.
Okay, so lots to talk about here, and so much of the imagining of what a world with almost no men in it would look like is what makes this book so intriguing. But of course, the current situation of living through a global pandemic makes those chapters so compelling to read. I mean, is there a crystal ball hiding in your cupboard somewhere, Christina, that the year before a global pandemic began, you were writing about a global pandemic? What was the actual inspiration for the plot device?
I do feel like I should maybe start playing the lottery quite frequently, given the timing. So I had been thinking, I think as a lot of us had, especially through, you know, 2017, 2018, about the place of women in society, and how I think there was a bigger conversation about the structures that we live within and how things could maybe change. And I read The Power by Naomi Alderman, which is a book that I really love. And it really made me think about using speculative fiction as a way to explore gender and the structures of that within society. And once I had the idea, I very quickly thought, no, I really want to write that book. You know, what would the world look like with only 10% of its men surviving kind of emotionally? How would that people, you know, deal with the impact of that? What would change? What would stay the same?
So, okay, we'll get to that, that element of the conversation in a minute. But first to say, obviously, reading this in 2020-21, so much of what you imagined in speculative form has come to pass. The lockdowns, the total stopping of international travel, the sense of people hiding in their own homes, afraid of that who they might pass the bug onto, worrying about how long it survives on surfaces, having to watch loved ones dying at a distance. I mean, those early chapters, as your key characters grapple with the loss of beloved sons and husbands and fathers, are really, really sad and difficult to read, particularly because of the current context. And I just want to share a quote with our audience of something that really resonated with me. Your one character, Faith, makes the comment, "Widow is the most common title in the world now. It's still unbearable. Just because lots of people are experiencing something alongside you doesn't make it any better. If anything, it's harder because you're not special. There are no allowances or respect for grief. The whole damn world is grieving. And what is one woman's grief in the face of a billion lost sons and fathers, brothers, and yes, husbands?" I mean, that gave me absolute goosebumps reading it, because it's something so many people have articulated to us here, Christina, that, you know, all of the usual structures and ceremonies around death and saying goodbye to those we love have been disrupted by this pandemic. Again, I have to ask, I mean, could you ever have imagined when you wrote those words that actually something like that kind of reality would be truth in just a year or two's time?
I mean, the honest answer is no, but I sometimes feel like I should have done, because obviously to write a book about with a pandemic is the central premise. I did lots of research into them. And so lots of people have kind of said, oh, did you change things after, you know, the pandemic started? But the honest answer was no, because those terms like social distancing and the, you know, the understanding of how you try and contain a pandemic and deal with it have been present in public health literature written by academics who study pandemics for a very long time. So I remember reading and there being, you know, people saying a pandemic will happen at some point in our lifetime, but you just don't think it's going to happen, you know, the following year. So it's been, I mean, it has been completely bizarre, obviously, that timing. But one of the things I think that maybe is helpful about the book is that obviously the pandemic within the book is very different to COVID, even though there are obvious similarities. But something I think that for me I've found is that people have said to me that they found the book ultimately by the time they finished it comforting, because we're still living through a pandemic. You know, we don't have an end point yet for this.
Yeah.
So reading a fictional story in which there is actually resolution and you get to read the end and see that there is hope and a way forward, I think in that sense, you know, the timing maybe, I hope that it helps people who read it to that extent.
That's really interesting, because I'm sure for some people it'll be a difficult read right now and maybe one they want to go back to later because it might be too raw for them in its current form. But as you said, I mean, it's a very different kind of virus. It's much more virulent. It kills much more quickly. And obviously the way it impacts society is very different. For me, the real powerful stuff in this book is the imagining of what comes after. When almost all of the men are gone, you now have a world in which women are in charge of everything, literally everything. There is no longer any job that is regarded as more suited to a man. And we get to see women as capable and level-headed and able to respond to a crisis and able to adapt and rise to the occasion. I mean, it's supremely feminist in that sense. And of course, I love the fact that you gave it some feminist backlash from the surviving men who, of course, come up with this conspiracy that this was all a feminist plot to actually bump the men off deliberately. Christina, fun to write, I'm sure, but I wonder how much resonance you're seeing now in the response to COVID and how so many people have got their theories on whether this was created deliberately to make money for Big Pharma or for whatever reason they think it is. The conspiracy theorists that you imagined are among us.
Yeah, that is something that I would have preferred, I think, to stay firmly within the pages of fiction. And it is one of those things. I think that when there is any huge change in any society, I mean, we know this through history, there will always be a section of people who fundamentally don't want, I think, to maybe face up to reality, you know, and don't want to face up to the fact that sometimes really bad things happen. And then sometimes brilliant things happen, for example, like a vaccine being invented so quickly, which I'm still so thrilled has happened, having researched vaccines a lot in the course of 2018. I'm just beyond amazed and really delighted that a vaccine was found so quickly. So yes, I suppose maybe shocked, but not surprised that there have been conspiracy theorists, just as I have in the book.
I'm glad you mentioned the vaccine, because for me, one of the most complex moments of the book is dealing with the Canadian scientist who finally gets the vaccine over the finish line, as it were, and then has to grapple with the decision of, well, what do I do? Do I make it available for free, or do I take the opportunity to be fairly paid for the work that I have developed? And it's a really challenging part to read, because as much as from a public health and humanitarian perspective, you're going, of course, you've got to make it available to the world for free. Because of what's come before, you also can't help reading a degree of sympathy for a woman who has spent her life being underrecognized and not paid as much as her male colleagues, finally going, this is my turn and I'm going to claim it. I mean, it's quite a conflicting character. I still don't know how I feel about her. How do you feel about her, Christina?
I think it's one of those things where when you've written someone as a character, you inevitably know their motivations, and you kind of see things from their perspective and you can put them in context. So I would say that I also feel a little mixed. I think that there is definitely something within the book where, you know, that character has spent a very long time, I think, feeling quite under-recognized for her work. And I don't think that she's necessarily, I don't think she's angry at anyone necessarily. I think she just kind of wants to make sure her mark is made in history. But also having you know, seen in real life, I think there is a real question as to if you have some significant invention, trying to make sure that it's done properly. I think a big concern in the book is, you know, this vaccine is so important, right? You know, it is the way back for the world. And she wants to make sure, I think, that it's also kind of done properly and that there's a system in place. Mm. But then again, even then, I'm probably just saying that to justify her actions, because that's how I thought it through when I was writing her.
Just for those who might have joined us late to the conversation, my guest is Christina Sweeney Baird, joining us via Zoom from the UK, where she is a corporate litigation lawyer, but one who has just published her first novel, The End of Men. And as I said at the beginning, it is eerily relevant to today's conversation, to today's context. Even though the book was written before we'd ever heard of COVID-19, it deals with the subject of a global pandemic, and in this case, one which only victimizes men and does so incredibly virulently. One of the really pithy parts of the book for me, Christina, was getting to the bit where most of the men in the world have been wiped out by this virus. Those who are left behind, who were immune and have survived, find themselves suddenly being completely sexually objectified for the first time in their lives, for many of them. Sort of the comment is, sort of, stop looking at me as if I'm nothing more than a potential breeder, they complain. And of course, I think every woman reading the book is going to go, well, welcome to our world. Now you know what it's like. How much fun did you have writing that part of the book? But it's funny, but with a bit of acid underneath the laughter, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think because one of the things that's really important to me is that the book has, I don't think, has any misandry in it. You know, the kind of, it really shows, I think, how important men and women are to the world and how they coexist. But so it's one of those things where none of the characters want that to be happening to that man. It's obviously really horrible for that to be happening to him. But it's more, I suppose, that specific character lacks the self-awareness to understand that he's complaining about something that has been happening to women, you know, for a very, very, very long time.
Yeah.
And that, you know, gender flipping of concepts, I think it just really, maybe hopefully in a relatively subtle way, shines a light on the things that could change, you know, in the real world that we live in.
I'm really interested to know what sort of feedback you've had from male readers, because Christina, obviously as a woman reading this book, I come to it with a particular perspective. So much of the commentary resonates with my own life and work journey. There is so much to be read into it from personal experience. How have men reacted to the book?
I've actually been really thrilled by men's reactions to the book. I know that it's obviously quite a spicy title that, you know, grabs attention, but the book, you know, really shows you, I think, how valuable, you know, men are. You know, the first kind of third of the book is really a lot of women trying to protect the men in their lives.
Yeah.
But I think also that you can see throughout the book that there's no, you know, it's not this kind of utopian story where I'm saying that that's how the world should be. But I think it shows you both the value of men and women, but also how in very sensible ways things could change and be improved. So I've only had responses from men saying, you know, they really enjoyed it. Maybe they were a little surprised by how much they enjoyed it, given the title, and that they felt like the book really recognized, I suppose, the value of men and women.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I mean, I certainly didn't read it as a misandrist book at all, I've got to be honest. But I did love the exploration of the feminist opportunities it opened up. I have to ask about the government response. One of your key figures in the book is a journalist, Maria Ferreira, who, you know, gets her big break writing about the pandemic and spotting early on that something big was brewing, and then continuing to ride the wave of the fame that brought her with her articles. And she makes the comment in one of her articles, "What I do know from years of reporting is that ignorance, incompetence and fear so often go hand in hand with governments that none of us should be surprised if the institutions we thought would keep us safe would in fact be woefully inadequate in the face of a pandemic." Now, again, you wrote this book before COVID. You hadn't had an opportunity to see how Boris Johnson would do in the face of a global pandemic. I have to ask, though, how do you feel listening to that quote read back to you, given the state of your government's response?
I think Cassandra is a title that I take on fairly frequently now. I mean, I think one of the things that's so interesting to me about seeing a real world pandemic, obviously it's been, you know, a kind of a horrifying time, but that there has been such a range of responses, and that even at different stages of the pandemic, different governments have done some things very well and some things very badly. You know, I won't say too much about the beginning of our government's response, but, you know, we then had the vaccine. I was at a lecture that Kate Bingham gave relatively recently where she was just extraordinary. She's the person who led the UK's vaccine task force. So I think one of the things I found interesting is maybe in the book, I actually think that happens as well, is that, you know, different countries go through different phases, right? Where sometimes things work and sometimes they don't. It's so dependent on who is in charge at the time, their views, the amount of information they're getting. And it, in many ways, it is, you know, I think it is, I actually think it is impossible for any one country, both in real life or in fiction, to have from the start to the finish, have, you know, a perfect, completely appropriate response to something which is something we've never lived through in our lifetime and hopefully never will again. So I suppose I try and focus on being grateful for the things that have gone right. You know, I'm sitting here in a country that I have had two vaccines, which I'm very grateful for. And I think that's the same for the book. You know, obviously there are mistakes. That one of the characters is a civil servant who I think is at times quite eviscerating of the politicians that she's around.
Yeah.
But I try and focus on her competence and how really, frankly, I'd quite like her to come into real life and be in charge of everything, to be honest. I think we'd all be doing quite well.
We'd all be well off if she was in charge, for sure. As you said, it is a book that ultimately is hopeful in the face of horror. It offers hope, it offers comfort, it offers a way out, and it also offers a reflection on our ability to survive the most awful circumstances. Do you think it's fair to say that this is ultimately a study of human resilience?
Absolutely. And that's something that's really important to me. You know, in some ways, I wrote a book about a pandemic by accident. You know, the question I really wanted to answer was, what does the world look like without men or without most of them? What is that world, you know, how is that world different or the same? And the most practical way of doing that in this fictional story was through a pandemic. But I can't imagine writing a story that was, you know, unrelentingly bleak or that didn't have some level of, if not necessarily a happy ending, certainly I think there is real hope at the end of the characters. You know, you find out where each character is, everything's kind of tied up with a bow. That I think is so important, especially when you've kind of taken readers through this quite emotional story and you've really wrung them out. There has to be a way through. And I do believe that. I'm very optimistic about human nature and people's abilities. And I think if you look at, you know, for example, some, you know, the way that, like, in the UK, the NHS has responded to the pandemic and that the sheer resilience and grit that, you know, medical staff have faced, some of whom I'm very good friends with, it's impossible to me to write a story that doesn't ultimately show just how extraordinary people can be.
I really, really enjoyed reading it, Christina. My final question is whether you're busy with the next one yet, please.
I am indeed. The next one is well on its way. My third draft is with my agent. It goes through many, many drafts to get it into final form. But yes, it's on its way.
We'll look forward to reading that one next. Christina, lovely to have you with us on the show today. Thank you so much for making time for us in what I know is an incredibly busy schedule. It's great to have you with us on Cave Talk.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Christina Sweeney Baird, the author of The End of Men, which is available in South Africa via Jonathan Ball Publishers. You are looking for a big red cover, soft cover, in all of the major bookstores. It is out now, and you'll pay around about 280 rand a copy for the paperback version. I found it absolutely gripping. I was on holiday when I read it. In fairness, I had time to be able to say I'm not putting it down in between chapters, but I really did read through the entire book in roughly, I think, 2.5 days, which, given that it runs to 400 pages, tells you how compelling I found it. The End of Men by Christina Sweeney Baird.